the third case for argument, the United States versus Cuellas-Perez.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Robert Murray. I represent Juan Manuel Cuellas-Perez. We're here today to discuss a case involving a live tracking of a GPS, use of a GPS device, live tracked a vehicle across about six states and actually five circuits of the United States Courts of Appeals.
So let me just cut right to the chase, Mr. Murray. Number one, in order to rule in your favor, is it your view that we would have to overrule our 2007 decision in the United States against Garcia? And my second question is, you know, if we think of this as a spectrum where, you know, the police can tail a car on the one hand, but at the other end of the spectrum you have something like the D.C. Circuit's decision in the United States against Maynard, which you did furnish to us and which we had seen, where does this fall in the spectrum? This is much shorter than Maynard. It's longer than, you know, a 30-minute.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think
tale.
It's any shorter than Maynard because it's actually more extensive than Maynard.
Well, but Maynard went on for a month.
Went on for 28 days, Judge, yes.
Yeah, so.
But in this case, Cuevas was tracked from his home in Phoenix for a period of about 3 days, but he was tracked across Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, I think part of Oklahoma, Missouri, and into Illinois, where he was finally stopped.
It's a few days. You mean he does the record show when he left Arizona?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe it does, although I can't recall at this moment, but I think it was 3 days, and I do know it was across. I did calculate it was across, actually, across five judicial circuits that he went through, the
right.
fifth,
he leaves
the eighth.
It like the sixth or the seventh. He's caught in the wee hours of February 9th, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Your Honor, I don't believe that the number of days is necessarily determinative of whether there's a Fourth Amendment violation here. In this case, the courts that have decided that these GPS cases where there's attachment of a GPS device to track a vehicle have been decided on some different issues. Number one, lots of the courts have decided whether or not the device was attached on the curtilage or on the property of the defendant, and I don't really think that matters. I also don't think it matters.
Isn't the essence of this whether there's a reasonable expectation of privacy? And I thought we held in Garcia that at least the act of attaching the device to the car was not something that people had any reasonable expectation. What pushes this over to Maynard?
Your Honor, the attachment of the device to the vehicle has nothing to do, really, with the ultimate issue of whether the Fourth Amendment is being violated.
Well, Maynard, couldn't they tell during this month that he was on the car who he visited, where he went, and who he sold drugs to, and who he delivered drugs to, and so
well,
forth?
Yes, Your Honor.
So
well, they could at least
reveal a lot more information than just where he was when it got to the end of the road.
No question, Your Honor. But, I mean, the attachment of the device, where it's attached, I don't think is really the relevant question. I believe the relevant question is, to what extent does a person have a reasonable expectation of privacy? And I think
Wait a minute. Are you sure that that's true in Maynard? I mean, this was a GPS device in Maynard as well that was on his vehicle.
Yes.
It wasn't something that picked up conversations. It wasn't something. So if he parked his vehicle somewhere, they could draw an inference. But
well,
the same thing would be true in your case, right?
Your Honor, the search that occurs here is the ability of government agents to follow a vehicle for an unlimited amount of time. And with regard to the issue of reasonableness, the courts that have decided against the necessity of a warrant here have decided it based upon, well, actually avoiding the issue of where and what the Fourth Amendment protects. The Fourth Amendment, as I understand it, protects people, not places, and it also protects you from unreasonable searches. Now, the reason in Mr. Cuevas-Perez's case the search was unreasonable is because it enabled the government to track him real-time, 24-7, for a period of about, I think, about 4 days.
And it's some guy just sitting at his desk, right? He's got a computer that's getting texts or something.
Judge, he's got a computer, and ostensibly what the government intended to do in this case was to follow Cuevas until he got to a destination where he was going to unload the drugs and arrest everybody. What happened was that there was a issue regarding the battery on the device, and so they alerted the police actually first in Missouri, and then they learned that he'd already crossed into Illinois, and they called the state troopers in Illinois, who decided they had to have a traffic stop in order to stop him. So they followed him for 34 miles. Before they decided that there was a traffic violation. And this traffic violation was the fact that he hadn't moved from the slow lane to the fast lane.
From the fast lane back into the slow lane, I think. Yeah. Everybody will violate, I mean, sooner or later, we all violate the traffic laws.
Yes, I'm sure, Your Honor. But the point is that the illegal attachment of the device without a warrant, the ultimate search, if there was probable cause for it to stop for a traffic violation, it was not, that did not attenuate the illegality of the attachment of the device here. I mean,
let me ask you a different question. Suppose we thought under Garcia that it's okay to attach these devices as long as you don't activate them, but before you activate them, you actually have to go and get a warrant for that intimate kind of tracking of the movements of the car that is described in Maynard. That at least would enable the police to put the thing on the car while it's out in the public roads. You could put a bumper sticker on somebody's car while it's out in the public roads if you wanted to do that, I guess. But it would still protect the privacy interests that you're talking about.
If a warrant was subsequently secured.
Sure. Well, you can't turn it on to have a warrant.
Your Honor, of course, there was a great deal, and I know you don't want me here to reiterate the facts, but the facts in Garcia were a great deal different than what we have here. In Garcia, the man was tracked within the confines pretty much of a city in Wisconsin. It was a device that required retrieval before any information could be taken from it.
Well, that might be. I'm not too impressed by the fact that it's just in a city, because I think the rule you're arguing for is that before this kind of very detailed search can take place, you have to have a warrant. I mean, yeah. And I understood you to be analogizing this to Kylo, actually, where technology becomes so intrusive that it invades a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Yes, Your Honor, of course, the government has cited the Knotts case, which, you know, that's ancient history, really. That's a beeper barrel of chloroform. And in that case, we far surpassed that. And even in Judge Posner's decision in Garcia, he recognized that this sort of thing has the potential for going too far.
So what does too far mean? He seemed to be thinking of mass surveillance of the entire population, whereas your argument about too far seems to be more in the nature of prolonged or detailed surveillance of one person.
Yes, that's true. It's another extension, another possibility that was not discussed in Garcia. The problem here, Judge, is that in the Cuevas case, the government was tracking 24/7 with a guy sitting at a computer, knew where he was at all times, and but for this alleged problem with the battery on the device, they could have tracked him forever. I mean, this thing potentially had a battery life of months. I don't know what happened to it, but it had a battery life of months. The other thing that I was thinking about, Judge, is this. You know, you attach one of these things to somebody's car. Now, that car may not be for the exclusive use of the person who they think is a perpetrator of crimes. Guy's wife can get in the car, his son, his daughter, and use that car to go to the grocery store. And, of course, the common argument in favor of the attachment of a warrant is it permits the government to track a vehicle to a guy going to an AA meeting, to the grocery store, to his mistress, to a bar, any place at all. It doesn't restrict him. And I thought that a good analogy would be the case of a wiretap without minimization. I mean, the wiretap laws require that if a call is being intercepted that has nothing to do with the alleged criminal activity, that they have to stop listening. They have to minimize that call. Well, what we have here is not only no warrant, we have no minimization. We have no way of controlling what the government can do in terms of keeping track of what a person is doing in their private affairs. Most certainly, as in Katz, where the court said that the government could not, officers could not attach a listening device to the outside of a phone booth. Certainly,
another piece of ancient history.
Well, it is right? A piece of ancient history, Judge. But the point of Katz and why it's important in this case is because it's about a man who's out in public. And certainly, if we get in our vehicle, get on the road, and start driving, I can't imagine that anyone believes that we lose all our expectation of privacy. And particularly if we're talking about reasonableness, we're certainly not expecting to have a government know where we are at all times. And that's the essence of the argument here. The Garcia case, you're correct, Your Honor, in that it focuses on mass use of these devices. But this is another aspect we have in this case. The aspect in this case is the use to such an extent that it's no longer reasonable, that Mr. Cuevas had a reasonable expectation of privacy. And where he is what's important. Where he is, he's a person. It's not the place where he is. That's not what the Fourth Amendment protects. It protects us from unreasonable search and seizure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Murray.
I'll reserve.
Yes. Mr. Norwood.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The government believes that you would have to overrule Garcia in order to rule in the defendant's favor in this case.
So you're not persuaded that Garcia itself was a case that focused on the affixing of the device? It looked like he'd waived any other argument. And as I suggested a minute ago, it's at least conceptually possible to distinguish between putting the device on and then activating it so that all the tracking can happen.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think in your hypothetical, the law enforcement would not even affix the device without getting the warrant if that was required. Because affixing the device, if you affix the device and then went to a judge and the judge said, no, you can't, then you'd have to just go and remove it. So
either that or abandon it, I suppose.
That's the putting the cart before the horse. As far as the time frames, I think this is a very important fact. According to the record, the device was put on the car on February 6th at, I believe, 12:07, shortly after noon. But what's important is, first of all, law enforcement in Arizona already had information that Garcia was a drug trafficker. They had observed him removing car panels from the back of his car.
But what you're saying is perhaps they could have gotten a warrant, but I've understood your argument to be that the Fourth Amendment just wasn't engaged at all.
I don't think it is, but and I think this is going to sort of distinguish it from the Maynard case where it just appeared that this GPS was put on forever for some unlimited purpose. But Maynard distinguished by saying this is not the case where somebody's going on a specific journey. And I think in this case, this defendant was going on a specific journey. At least law enforcement officers had that belief and then affixed the device. They already had a poll camera set up outside his house,
but
saw
but
this
I
activity,
think...
and then attached the device for this journey. When I looked at Garcia, there was no time frame involved that I could find. Perhaps the court could find it. But there was no time frame involved in how long the device was on that vehicle. It just says the later police retrieved the device and were able to learn the car's travel history since the installation of the device. So I'm not sure how long the time frame in the Garcia case that the device was on there.
So but my question is, I mean, Judge Ginsburg's opinion for the D.C. Circuit attempts to distinguish Garcia. He's, you know, going through what other courts of appeals have done. And so I understand you to be saying that you don't find his distinction particularly persuasive, and so that if we were to find that Maynard had laid out a persuasive approach to this area, that we would have to go through our procedures for reconsidering a case, that we shouldn't accept his distinction of Garcia.
I think the Maynard case, because the facts were so different, that the expectation of privacy that one may expect to be reasonable may be different. I just think basically the D.C. court had a different expectation of privacy. I mean, it's sort of in the court's mind, okay, what's a reasonable expectation of privacy?
But here's the question. What he says is, applying the foregoing analysis, he's gone through a lot of things, we hold the whole of a person's movements over the course of a month is not actually exposed to the public, and so on and so forth. So if instead of over the course of a month, we said over the course of 3 days, is it the difference between a month and 3 days? Because certainly everything, these are both movements in a car only, I guess reflecting that American society lives in cars practically. So everything that the car does in Maynard is exposed for a month. Everything that Mr. Cuevas' car does for 3 days is exposed. So do you think there's a constitutional difference between a month and 3 days?
I think what the expectation of privacy that a person has is different if somebody is tracking them for an entire month, an entire year, versus 3 days on a single journey for 3 days.
Why does somebody have a lesser expectation of privacy for a 3-day, multi-state, single journey?
Because I believe the D.C. Circuit's rationale was that it is effectively impossible for law enforcement to track a vehicle on a public highway over the course of 28 days, 24 hours a day. It is not impossible to do that for a course of 3 days. For example, if law enforcement, say you had a high-profile murder and you had a suspect who was a person of interest who you didn't have enough information on, but police wanted to maintain tabs on that individual so he did not flee, they could easily follow that person for 3 days using different law enforcement officers at different times to make sure that the person did not flee the area.
Couldn't they do it for a month then, if you're imagining a team approach?
Well,
I don't know why not.
Sure.
He's not like one guy who has to do it.
Well, you can do it forever in theory, but we're talking what's sort of practical and what's reality. And
there's the other thing. It's a resource intensive move, even for 3 days, actually, to have a team of officers tailing somebody. Whereas if all you have to do is slap some little thing the size of an air wick, you know, on a car, and then some guy just sits at his computer and watches the little texts come in, that's very easy to do.
I understand. And by the same theory, if you could follow that same car by satellite across the country without affixing some device to the car, it'd be the same result, because the person is on a public thoroughfare, which the expectation of privacy when you're out in public is different than when you're in your home. When you're home in the home talking on the phone?
Well, maybe yes, maybe no. I mean, how do you deal with Kylo? I mean, our court had actually thought that these thermal imaging things were okay, and we were informed by the Supreme Court that we were wrong in Kylo.
And I think in the court's opinion in Garcia, it explains what the difference is between the Kylo case and this case. The Kylo case, they were thermal, as I understand it, they were thermal imaging inside the residence to determine what was happening, to determine abnormalities inside the residence, which was traditionally and has always been an area that you would need a warrant to go into in order to examine what's inside the house, unless obviously the windows were open and you could see through binoculars from plain view. But it was examining an area that this court and courts have historically said is sort of sacrosanct inside a private home. When a person takes their vehicle, if I go to the grocery store and the police decide to follow me from my house to the grocery store, they have every right to do so. They have every right to do so. I'm out in public. My expectation of privacy is much different than if I'm in my house and I use the electricity bill to run a sauna and they do a thermal image and say I'm growing marijuana and they kick in my front door.
But what Judge Ginsburg says is, yes, your trip to the grocery store, each isolated thing you do might be something that you have an expectation of privacy in, but somehow the whole is greater than the sum of the parts here. You don't really expect to see a police log of everything you do from whenever you wake up in the morning to the moment you park your car at the end of the day, day in and day out.
I understand what he's saying, and but respectfully disagree. When you go out in public, your expectation of privacy is much different than if you stay at home. If you have 40 acres that's fenced off, stay out, your expectation of privacy is that people will stay out. If you leave that 40 acres and drive down the highway, your expectation of privacy is different. If you go to a public market or a public park, your expectation of privacy is different.
And so the question, I guess, is whether it's great enough in the aggregate to trigger the Fourth Amendment's protections, or whether it somehow falls below that level. Because there is a point at which the passengers on the bus had an expectation of privacy, that people didn't go around squishing their suitcases, and yet these were public conveyances.
I understand, but even, well, I guess that the passengers wouldn't squeeze their baggage, but even in today's, I mean, things change over time in the sense that if I put a bag in an overhead compartment on an airplane and the next passenger, or I've helped, you know, help an old lady, here, let me get your bag, and I feel contraband.
Hey, I'm that old lady. I put too much in my suitcases.
So I think our expectations change. Also, our expectation of privacy with electronic devices also has to change. I think the court and society as a whole will see a lot more information about them becoming available. For example,
but isn't that scary? I mean, I think that we're trying to learn to live in this. You're right. I agree with you that it's a more intrusive world, but surely that doesn't mean the Fourth Amendment's completely defunct.
But I'm thinking, I don't practice family law, never want to, but if I were a divorce attorney, I would say, can I get the historical information of where my spouse has been using their cell phone information?
They're doing that, and they're also doing things like iPass, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's out there because if you have a cell phone, my work, the U.S. government can say, where are you, Norwood? Are you in this Court of Appeals like you're supposed to be, or are you traveling somewhere else? Our expectations of privacy are different because of that. OnStar, I mean, pretty soon you will probably not be able to buy a vehicle that does not have something like OnStar. And if you have a crash, they know exactly where you are. They will summon help, and they are advocating that or using that as why you need it. So as technology advances, our expectations of privacy may change. And in this case, simply slapping a GPS to follow or track a vehicle, which law enforcement could do anyways, on a public thoroughfare, and I think that's important. This isn't tracking someone on a private compound. This is tracking the person on a private thoroughfare. The police could do it. This just makes it more efficient for them to do it.
Norwood, following your line of thought about the changing times and your dialogue with Judge Wood, which, of course, one can't dissent from the reality of what's going on, would you say in this area we still should, as it emerged, focus on a discreet trip and some temporal aspect? I mean, I'm not asking you to set the time limit or the range of the destination, but would the government be urging that as an initial focus?
One of the difficulties is speaking for the entire government in a situation like this.
Justice Department position, I'm just asking you to share your view. That's all.
I understand. I think in this case, the fact that it is a distinct trip versus surveillance indefinitely, which could be indefinite, 24 hours a day, it is a little different.
What I'm thinking of is, tragically, in our society, there are threats made against the highest officer in the land, the president. And the president could be in a specific location making his speech, and so certainly law enforcement, if they've gotten threatening communications from that individual, maybe short of arresting them, want to track that person.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's hard to think of a more serious threat to the president. Would, after the 2-day stay in Minneapolis, would we be tracking that individual for 360 or 365?
Indefinitely, see if he then travels to where the president might next go. I'm not certain. I think in this circuit, they would have the ability to do that. I think in this circuit and under the law, I think they would have the ability to do it. In D.C., they wouldn't. And I think that's – I think eventually the Supreme Court might have to step in and resolve this issue, because you're going to eventually have a case where somebody leaves Chicago where it's permissible to put on a GPS for – and assume it's a single trip that we know they're taking drugs, and they go and end up in D.C., and then the question is, okay – first of all, where to charge the case, but you have different law, and I think the Supreme Court might eventually have to step in and decide.
Can you make a distinction between tracking somebody to find out what they're doing en route, and as they did in Maynard, they tracked them in an area, and they apparently knew where he was at various times, whereas here you're just using it to find out where he is right now. Surveilling his entire activity over a period of time.
And I think the facts and the reasons why they're surveilling and the time limit is all a factor.
Wasn't really a time limit. I mean, as I understand the facts of Mr. Cuevas' case, they may have had a much more extended time period in mind to see who he was contacting or what places he was going to with these drugs, but this battery problem sort of prematurely stopped the program.
But it's my understanding he was simply going to deliver they were tracking to see who he's going to deliver the drugs to.
Right, maybe now, made the three worst or four case, deliveries, you know, guess, maybe they weren't finished.
Well, and I guess the worst case scenario or the longest time would be, I guess, from Arizona all the way to the northern reaches of Maine, which might be another day or so, but it was limited in scope, limited in time, limited in scope. It wasn't a...
So would you agree that you have to have a warrant if it's not? I mean, and what's our evidence that it's limited in time or scope?
I just think based on these facts where you have an individual who you already have information that is drug dealing. I see my time is up. May I finish this briefly?
You may conclude that thought, Mr. Rowe.
And you have a poll camera up already. You see suspicious activity of him removing panels from the car. They did not see what he put in, but they saw him put something in. Screw those panels back in. Change the license plate, which we later learned was probably a mistake. And then travel. Start immediately traveling across the country. And you're already known drug traffic. I think, based on the facts of this case, they're nowhere close to Maynard.
Sounds like you might have been able to get a warrant, but I don't know. You know.
Anyway. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Norwood. Mr. Murray.
Your Honor, the fact is that they probably could have got a warrant in Cuevas. They had information from a confidential informant. However, the informant told them that Cuevas was smuggling, and this is in the record, that he was responsible for smuggling cocaine either in or out of Utah. And then they had a poll camera outside of his house, and he had an open carport, absolutely open carport, and they saw him, I guess, fiddling around with the door panels and the panel on the back hatch of the Jeep. And they decided that, and they also saw a young man walking up with a laundry basket that had something in it, and they decided that this, coupled with the information from the confidential informant, meant that he was going to be doing something illegal. They went to his place of employment, attached this device out on a street. Actually, it was a public area, and again, I don't believe that that's determinative of whether there was a Fourth Amendment violation here. The fact is, there was no limitation, as the government says, on what the government could have done here. The only thing that happened here was the battery on their device was running dead. Otherwise, they could have tracked this fella up to his destination, and as Your Honor stated, to make deliveries to three or four different people, I suppose, and have come back home, because they would have wanted to have arrested him at the point of delivery. But theoretically, they could have followed him all the way back home and kept following him, for that matter, because they could have arrested those people at the point of delivery later and followed him all the way back home until he made further deliveries. So this was unlimited, the attachment of this GPS device. And this is why it is unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment to attach a GPS device without benefit of a search warrant.
What should be the limit? Let's say, Mr. Murray, following your thought through to should have been a warrant to put on the GPS device, what should be the limit of based on what you've described could justify a warrant? What would you say? A week? 30
no,
days?
No, I think that we have to, it's for the courts to determine what's reasonable. Just as though when an officer goes and presents an affidavit to a judge, or if he, like most of the time they do now, call in telephonically, that the judge says in the warrant, it's going to be either a daytime or a nighttime warrant. And if it's going to be a nighttime warrant, the reasons are because we expect this guy to maybe be armed and dangerous. We don't want to give him any alert that this might happen. There has to be some reasonable limitation. And I think, I don't know if I can make a guesstimate at what that should be, but I don't think that a warrant for a GPS device should be allowed to permit a vehicle to be followed for more than a day.
Well, what about the situation with all the courier individuals who go to, quote, we used to call destination cities from the Southwest? I'm sure you're familiar with that area.
Yes.
To the Midwest. If we got information about a mule slash courier coming from...
Then, Your Honor, I think the answer is that if, in fact, law enforcement has probable cause by way of adequate information, that they could then secure a search warrant, asking a judge to give them, this is what we think we need here. We need 5 days because the information we have is this guy is going to end up in New York, in Brooklyn, with this load of cocaine. So
it always needs a warrant then.
Yes, I think, and the problem is, judges, is that if we don't have a warrant for these cases, I mean, as the court knows, there's state courts and federal courts all over the land which have decided these cases differently. And what's going to happen, and I think I mentioned it not in a kidding way, but in a serious way, that if my client had left the state of Oregon and it ended up in Massachusetts, he probably wouldn't be in jail right now. I mean, the fact is, if he traveled a northern route across the United States, he could have literally traveled through states where the courts have said, you got to have a warrant to attach this device. And the fact that he had a southwesterly route and traveled up to Illinois lands him in jail for 10 years. So if we don't have a universal standard for these GPS devices, and maybe that's for the Supreme Court, I don't know. I know that they haven't decided a case specifically like this yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. Thank you, Mr. Norman. Case is taken under advisement.